This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
The AI minister is saying that he now has a meeting scheduled with the head of OpenAI, Sam Altman, that will take place next week. Evan Solomon says he wants to make sure in that meeting that the company is following through on its new commitments around safety. And he also says that he will be meeting with other major platforms to ensure they're also having clear measures in place to protect Canadians. I want to read you some of the statement that just came out from his office. Solomon says the tragedy in Tumblr Ridge has raised serious questions about how digital platforms respond when credible warning signs of violence emerge. Canadians deserve greater clarity about how human review decisions are made, how escalation thresholds are applied, and how privacy considerations are balanced with public safety. Decisions affecting Canadians must reflect Canadian laws, Canadian standards, and Canadian expertise.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast. This week's episode is going to be a bit different. Over the past roughly 10 days, Canada has experienced one of the fastest moving technology policy debates in recent memory. What began as reporting about a tragic act of violence, the shootings in Tumblr Ridge, BC, have quickly evolved into questions about AI safety, corporate responsibility, police reporting obligations, and now potential AI regulation. I'm going to try to unpack the debate and raise some real questions about where things seem to be headed. Now, at the center of this debate sits a key question. Should AI companies be required to report users to law enforcement based on what people say in their private conversations with chatbots? And if so, what standards should be met before reporting? That sounds like an AI safety issue, but I think it actually involves far broader issues: privacy, surveillance, and the role governments expect technology companies to play in policing and monitoring digital communications. Today, I want to walk through what's happened over the past 10 days or so, examine the policy responses that we're starting to see being proposed, explain why I think both the Online Harms Act as a model and some of the AI legislative models are poorly suited to this problem, and try to make the case that Canada instead needs to start thinking seriously about developing an AI Transparency Act. Let's start first, though, with what's been happening, recognizing, though, that by the time you listen to this, more may have taken place. Now, the story starts with the Wall Street Journal, which broke a story revealing that OpenAI, which owns ChatGPT, had previously flagged the account of Jesse Van Rensselaer, the Tumblr Ridge shooter. According to the reporting, OpenAI company staff internally reviewed the account and ultimately led first to block the account and later debating whether the activity on that account met the threshold for escalating as a report to law enforcement. As I mentioned, the account itself was banned, but ultimately they made the decision not to report to police. And in fact, they now have also revealed that the shooter actually went ahead and tried to create a second account to evade the block. From the perspective of the company, they had this debate, but they ultimately decided that the case didn't meet its standard of, and I'll quote, an imminent and credible risk of serious physical harm to others. Once the report in the Wall Street Journal was released, the issue quickly morphed into a major political issue. Within days, Evan Solomon, the AI minister, summoned OpenAI executives to Ottawa to explain the company's decision-making processes. In the immediate aftermath of that meeting, which I should note was attended by several ministers, Solomon publicly expressed disappointment and suggested that stronger safeguards and more action were needed. The Justice Minister, Sean Fraser, who was also at the meeting, indicated that regulation could follow if the companies failed to make changes. Now, OpenAI responded a day later with a letter that outlined its plan of action, or at least its commitments to the government. Those included continued changes to what it calls its Enhanced Law Enforcement Referral Protocol, Now, it says that under the new standards, there would have been a referral to law enforcement. In addition, it committed to developing a direct point of contact with Canadian law enforcement, embedding country and community context in its de-escalation work, and enhancing its system to detect repeat policy violators. Solomon wasn't really satisfied, though, and a day later, he responded that he expected more and that all potential governmental responses were still on the table. He also indicated that he would be meeting directly with Sam Altman of OpenAI in the coming week. And I should note that BC Premier David Eby, who has been harshly critical of the company, has said the same regarding an Altman meeting. So, in a span of just over a week, conversation moved from the tragedy involved with the shooting to accountability to emerging expectations that AI systems should function as some early warning policing mechanisms. Now, I think that shift raises several difficult questions. First, what happens when governments begin to demand greater policing and monitoring by private AI companies? Secondly, is the model established by the Online Harms Act or some of the AI regulatory models that we saw proposed in Canada and have been adopted in Europe the right legal tools to address this kind of issue? And thirdly, if they're not, what should Canada be doing instead? Now, I plan in this podcast to walk through all three of these questions. Note that I have a Globe and Mail op-ed that will appear in print in the paper on Monday. It is already online as I record this, and it covers some of the issues that are going to be discussed in this podcast. I've also got a post upcoming that will unpack the Online Harms Act applicability in further detail. Let's start, though, with the risks associated with pressuring AI companies to engage in greater monitoring of their users and reporting that usage in some instances onto police. Now, the desire to hold someone responsible for the potential prevention of the Tumblr Ridge tragedy is obviously understandable. When you add in the mounting pressure for AI regulation, it seems to me that OpenAI makes for a perfect target for blame and threats of government action. Yet holding AI chatbots liable for reporting to police what its users privately post in conversations creates its own risks, undermining privacy and effectively encouraging heightened corporate surveillance. Now, this isn't typically part of AI regulation. AI regulation has generally focused on AI outputs, concerns that chatbots might coach self-harm or provide inaccurate health information that is then relied upon by users. In this instance, the emphasis isn't on the outputs, but rather on what users tell the chatbot. Now, those are often private, can be intensely personal, and function much more like a private conversation than a public posting. Indeed, the content typically isn't public at all. If governments demand greater surveillance of these conversations and lower standards for reporting to police, I think the result is pretty predictable. We're going to see more investigations, more false positives, more scrutiny of what is lawful behavior, with a whole series of risks that I think are very real from both a privacy perspective and more broadly in terms of over-policing and some of the risks that come from that. Further, I don't think this stops with just AI systems. Technology intermediaries already sit at the center of nearly everything people write. Emails, text messages, collaborative documents, and cloud storage. If governments normalize expectations that companies should report suspicious private conduct based largely on this kind of writing, the rationale will quickly expand beyond just AI chatbots. Now, the issue isn't whether companies should ever act. I think it's quite clear that in some instances they should. In this instance, OpenAI clearly did act by identifying the risk, banning the account, and ultimately escalating the concerns internally. The real question is whether government should compel monitoring and then even disclosure of that private expression and what standard should be adopted should there be these kinds of disclosures. Now, I think, as pointed out, there are big risks associated with this approach. As the week progressed, one line of thought began to take hold. Why not incorporate chatbots into the government's online harms plans? Indeed, reports indicate that Heritage Minister Mark Miller brought the gang back together, so to speak, by asking the former online harms expert panel for advice on the issue. Now, no one asked me, but I think it is an ill-fitting bad idea. Before asking whether the Online Harms Act should apply to chatbots, I think it's worth asking a more basic question. What was the Online Harms Act, then Bill C-63, designed to regulate? And when you look back at that bill, which listeners will know died on the order paper, and there are expectations that at some point this year we will see a version of that bill resurface and be introduced in the House of Commons. Now, that initial bill was drafted primarily to address the harms that were associated with social media platforms. Section 2 of the bill defined a social media service as a website or application that's accessible in Canada, the primary purpose of which is to facilitate interprovincial or international online communication among users of the website or application by enabling them to access and share content. The bill then proceeds to identify a whole series of obligations for what it calls regulated services. Regulated services are defined as a social media service, effectively with a certain number of users. That would to be determined by regulation by the government. So the legislative concern was environments built around user-to-user communications at scale, platforms where content could be widely shared and then amplified to even larger audiences. Now, as I'm sure just as about everybody knows, AI chatbots operate very differently. A chatbot interaction is not a user-to-user communication. It doesn't involve dissemination across a network or exposure or amplification to an audience. Instead, a prompt is entered into, say, ChatGPT, and it's typically only visible to the user and to OpenAI, to ChatGPT, the provider. Now, the drafters of Bill C-63, the Online Harms Act, recognize the privacy implications of extending regulation too far, as the Act expressly excluded privacy communications. Section 6 sub 1 of that bill said that the duties imposed under this act on the operator of a regulated service do not apply in respect of any private messaging feature of the regulated service. In other words, if you were a large social media company that offered up, of course, a platform for sharing content, but also offered up private messaging, and of course, many of the services do exactly that, the aspect of your service that involved private messaging would have fallen outside the obligations in this act. Now, to provide a bit of color on this, Section 6 sub 2 tried to provide a bit more detail, defining this private messaging as communication sent to a limited number of users chosen by the sender, rather, and I'm paraphrasing here, to a potentially unlimited audience. The exclusion reflects, I think, a deliberate attempt to create a boundary between regulating public harms and preserving the privacy of interpersonal communications. Now, as between those two possibilities, exchanges with chatbots feel much more like the private form of communications, which, as I mentioned, was excluded from the Act. Some of the same structural tensions appear in the way the Act treats monitoring. Section 7 sub 1 said that nothing in this act requires an operator to proactively search content on a regulated service that it operates in order to identify harmful content. In other words, they've tried to make it very clear that there was no requirement to actively or proactively look for content to try to identify if harms were occurring. So in other words, responsibility, but no requirement to engage in continuous surveillance. There was a narrow exception to that in Section 7 sub 2, which permitted technological measures to prevent child sexual victimization material. So that was where proactive monitoring was permitted, but really only in that circumstance. In the other circumstances, it fell outside what was required. Now, the discussion this week is moving in the opposite direction, towards greater proactive monitoring. In this context, identifying dangerous behavior within generative AI chatbots would almost inevitably require analyzing prompts and conversational patterns within private exchanges. Applying the Online Harms Act to chatbots would, I think, fundamentally change the kind of balance that was embedded in the legislation itself. When it came to privacy, it sought to actually exclude the kind of exchanges that exist with chatbots. And in terms of a desire for these companies to better identify potential harms, it also, in the Online Harms Act, excluded the prospect of that proactive monitoring. Now, it should be noted that these issues actually date back from even before Bill C-63. People who closely follow these issues will recall that the government's first online harms plans in 2021 never made it into a bill, but were the subject of a consultation under then Heritage Minister Stephen Guilbeault. That proposal also excluded private communications, but was much more aggressive about proactive monitoring and reporting. Now, it should be noted that those plans in particular around proactive monitoring and reporting were roundly criticized, and they were ultimately abandoned, which is why we got the balance we see struck in Bill C-63. It is notable, I think, to see these kinds of proposals resurface just this week in the context not of a social media service, but rather one of an AI chatbot. Now, somewhat related to this, I think it's also worth at least noting that AI legislative proposals or models, such as the EU AI Act or what we saw in Canada with the former Bill C-27, which also died on the order paper, don't really solve this issue either. Most global AI regulation focuses on harms that arise from AI systems and their outputs. For example, the European Union's AI Act adopts a risk-based framework regulating AI according to potential societal impact. General purpose, generative AI type systems that rely on large language models do face some requirements involving documentation, safety testing, and risk mitigation, but they aren't regulated like a high impact or high risk system. Now, the earlier Canadian legislation, Bill C-27, followed a similar logic, focused on these high impact, high risk systems and the risks that could come from automated decision making. Now, again, the concerns with this form of regulation and harms has focused largely on the outputs that come from generative AI and times from chatbots. It's not focused on the inputs that are coming from users. The extent to which people have been paying attention to inputs, the focus has been more on what gets inputted into large language models, not user interactions in terms of what they are telling an AI service or an AI chatbot. Now, we heard this week about the need for AI regulation, and it sort of resurfaced some of this debate. But to be clear, most AI regulation proposals have not been focused on this issue. So what do we actually need? I think this past week revealed a different regulatory gap. As I noted in my Globe piece, AI corporate frameworks have so little transparency that the AI minister needed a meeting with corporate executives to understand the company's safety policies and how they're administered. That's untenable. Everyone should have access to this information. A better starting point would be an AI Transparency Act. Companies such as OpenAI should be required to fully disclose their policies on user safety, including the standards used to escalate matters beyond flagging content or banning users from the platform. If those standards are viewed as too strict, then it's up to governments to engage in developing uniform requirements for intermediaries that better strike the balance between safety and privacy. Further, the use of reporting processes should be made public, with annual transparency reporting to advise the public, providing aggregated numbers on disclosures to government or law enforcement. And I should note, the public should know who's doing the asking. Is this voluntary information coming from the AI companies based on the standard being met? Or is this government or law enforcement doing the asking itself? Now, transparency is already emerging as a central issue in some of the copyright debates surrounding large language models. The EU AI Act requires providers of general purpose AI models to publish summaries of training data sources. The chatbot debate raises a parallel concern. just as creators are understandably seeking transparency about what goes into AI models, policymakers need transparency about how companies respond to the risks that emerge through their use. Indeed, I think more than just policymakers need this information, the public deserves access to it as well. So I think what we really need at this moment is more transparency, which I think offers the promise of better oversight without surveillance. The Tumblr Ridge tragedy is going to continue to spark demands for action, and rightly so. But the Online Harms Act was designed to address publicly amplified harms while protecting private communications. AI legislation governs system outputs. Neither framework was built to monitor or police private conversations between individuals and machines. If the government responds by encouraging the companies to monitor these conversations, the long-term privacy consequences may far exceed the risks that policymakers are trying to address. That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.